So your trip home, where were you headed once you were discharged?
New Edinburgh, Arkansas.
You were headed back to Arkansas?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What was it like getting home?
Pretty good. I had graduated from high school with a very small class that was only 12 seniors. Mm-hmm. One of them died of a ruptured appendix about the time of graduating, and two of them got killed in World War II, and one of them, they never did find his body. He was one of my best friends. He died on Okinawa, mm-hmm. and they never found his body. So we've had some school reunions. I was 2-1 down there 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And in the area, our basic thing down there used to be farming, but now it's all lumber. There was a lot of lumber then, too. See, they have several big sawmills there, and like one of them, all it does is oak hardwood flooring
mm-hmm.
and stuff. It was good to be home. And of course, by then, I was pretty sure I was going to get married.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got married that next October the 20th.
So did she stay in the Seattle area, or did she?
Okay. Yeah. We wrote letters every day, and we talked a lot on the phone, and she agreed to come to fly down to Little Rock, and we got married. And mm-hmm. we lived in Arkansas for about a year, and then we moved I always wanted to leave Arkansas because I didn't like the heat, the tornadoes, the insects, the snakes, and poor pay.
Yeah.
So we moved to Billings in September 1947.
What brought you to Billings? Just
Marge had lived here some. She was from Big Fork. That's over in the northwest part of the state. And her folks happened to be living here at that time. And so That's why we moved to Billings, and I've been very. We rented an apartment on the 1000 block of North 26th Street, and we've been there ever since in two different houses.
Well, at this point, were your brothers both out of the service then?
They got out way before I did.
Way before you did, okay.
Because my Marine brother was. He was wounded so badly, they moved him back to San Francisco. I think he was in the hospital in San Francisco for 7 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then the brother in the Air Force, he got back very fast. You know, they flew the planes back very fast.
From mm-hmm.
there. And so they beat me home by probably 6 months.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So what was it like to see them? Again, to reunite with them.
It was great. And, they followed various courses. The Marine brother, he was a structural engineer, and he wound up working for a coal generating plant in Lake Charles, Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And spent all of his life there. My other brother, the pilot, he wound up in Saudi Arabia. Most of his flying life, he flew for Saudi Arabia, TWA, Saudi Arabian Airlines. TWA mm-hmm. managed it, Saudis owned it. He lived in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. And he wound up marrying a gal from Bear Creek. I don't know if you know where Bear Creek is. It's a little town just east of Red Lodge, between there and Belfry.
Okay.
It's a coal mining town. And he met her here and stuff, and eventually got married. And they moved to Springdale, Arkansas, which is up in the Ozarks.
Mm-hmm.
And he quit flying then for a while, and then he went back to college up there. And he wound up selling real estate until he retired. He's 3 years older than I am. He's 83.
Mm-hmm.
And the other brother died.
Okay.
There were six of us in our family. I had an older brother and a sister, and there was five of us parts. And the only brother left is the one that lives in Springdale, Arkansas.
Okay. Wow. Back to your service, once you got discharged, did you keep track of any of the friends that you made on board the ship?
Yeah, basically, I was going to show you one picture there. Basically, they were mostly guys that I was responsible for them.
Mm-hmm.
Come on. And the last one that I was keeping in touch with, he was a chiropractor in Bremerton, Washington. And so now, Harry Chess, it seems that he's dead. Somewhere here. Oh, I don't know why that arrow is there, but that where that arrow pointed, that's not me. You probably couldn't tell me what's me. That was my sonar and radar crew. Okay, that's me right there.
Oh, okay.
That was to be standing right by some beautiful little boats down in the water. But Ness and Harry Chess and a whole bunch of those guys are in there. And there's one by the name of Tony Bruno that's still alive, and he lives in Louisiana somewhere. He works for an outfit that hauls petroleum stuff upside down. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a reunion this year in Reno in September. I don't know if we're going. That depends on health and money and whatever. I've been to several reunions. I've been to one in Seattle and one in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
They've had them out every five to 10 years, depending. The last one I went to was in San Diego, and out of the 300, there was 83 that showed up. But you see, most of them had been in the regular Navy before the war.
Yeah.
And they were a lot older than I was.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, I would doubt, well, you see, we're dying at 1,600 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Or a day. 1,600
a day.
Yeah. Of course, there were 16 million people in the military, or roughly that. And so the World War II veterans are, this happens to be the brother that was in the Marines. We happened to have gotten home at the same time for that 10-day deal.
Oh, okay.
And that was in our local newspaper. Oh, this is a picture without the catapult.
Oh, yeah. It's got extra guns on the back.
40 millimeters and 20 millimeters and torpedo tubes. We would have been in bad shape if we hadn't had those torpedo tubes.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
that saved our people a lot of lives.
That battle that you mentioned, you know, where you guys dropped was it 10 torpedoes?
Yeah, each one of those had five in it, and they dropped the 10, and the experts say that we hit him with seven.
Yeah, it's definitely a help. I mean, you're not going to sink a battleship with just deck guns for the most part.
No. But you see, the big battleships like the West Virginia, California, Tennessee, and a bunch of them, they were back behind us. And as soon as we were all clear of them, they started firing.
Mm-hmm.
And so they sucked basically the rest of the ships were theirs. Of course, the California and West Virginia, they had those 16 inches. I mean, you got a projectile 16
yeah.
inches in diameter. That's a lot of TNT.
Coming at you.
And they had those,
right through
what
ship.
They call piercing heads on them, where they would go through a deck of a ship and then explode until it was clear.
Mm-hmm.
And that was disastrous
yeah.
for them. But you see, the Japanese that was floating out in that water, they got caught in the trap,
mm-hmm.
you know? They probably wasn't in favor of the war or blooming the war at all. But they got mad at us, if I'm understanding what the History Channel says, when Japan was so brutal in running over China just free will. Japan, see, doesn't have any oil production in their whole
mm-hmm.
country. they were getting their oil and their scrap metal from us.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when we found out what they were up to, they we cut them off. Mm-hmm. England and all of us cut them off of oil.
Cut off the oil, the scrap metal.
Their leadership was of the opinion that, you know, if they captured the United States, we got a lot of oil.
Mm-hmm.
And really, I think if the truth was known, they could have captured Hawaii without hardly a sweat. And they could have come to California and with a bunch of, all of our ships basically were destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
They could come to California with a bunch of troops and ships and stuff, and they could have moved in on a long way before they got stopped.
Well, yeah, I mean, basically, there wasn't much trained troops. I mean, definitely not on the West Coast for defense.
And our fighter pilots was... We had one, a P-40, that General Renault used over in China to fight the Japanese over there. And I know when I was in boot camp, the fighters that were training there in boot camp was all P-40s.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, they weren't fixed to land on carriers. Later on, they came with an F-4F, and it has the strangest sounding motor you ever. It sounded like a washing machine running.
Yeah.
It was designed. It had this huge radial engine in it,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of wind resistance to it, so it didn't have the speed. Well, later on, they came with the Corsair. That's that gold wing.
Mm-hmm.
And see, it narrowed down the cowling around the front engine to pretty small.
Mm-hmm.
And it could fly as fast as the Zero could, but it couldn't maneuver as well as the Zero could turn within it. You know, when there'd be a dogfight over our head, we didn't shoot because you're scared to shoot. So
yeah.
you stand there on the deck and you watch the whole thing. But I watched that Convair and I've never seen him lose a fight. And I watched it. And then later on with the P-38, you know, the commanding stuff, when they secured the airstrip in, at Leyte Gulf there in the Philippines, they brought some of those in by ships and reassembled them and stuff. And they became our air cover. And they weren't really designed as a fighter. It's supposed to be a kind of a light bomber or something.
Mm-hmm.
But by then, the Japanese had lost all their good pilots, and, you want one more story?
Sure. We got to get on tape here.
When we were there, when the landing was going on and stuff, there was a troop ship with a lot of supplies on it, got hit with the Japanese, dropped a torpedo, and hit it. It didn't sink it. So they sent us in to protect it, and while seagoing tugboat dragged it to the beach so they could unload it. Well, and then we had B-38s for air cover.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that worked good until their relief didn't get there before they ran out of gasoline. And so they had to go back, and while that happened, here come the Japanese planes just like a bunch of mad hornets.
Boy.
And they sunk it. They hit it with torpedoes, and I remember it went down, strange thing, it went down stern first, which is quite unusual. And all these trucks and tanks and stuff were dropping off like flies. And the tub that had a huge metal cable hook to it, they couldn't get enough slack to it to get loose from it, knowing it was sinking.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the captain had one of these bullhorns, and he said, "Have you got an axe?" "Yeah, well, that thing is so tight. Start whacking away with the white, and it'll actually cover it loose." So they just barely got it cut loose when the thing went.
Oh boy!
And we were having coffee with some friends of ours here in town. His name was Ray Harrison, and we were kind of talking about it. I knew he'd been in the Army, and I knew he'd been in the Philippines. He said, "Boy, let me tell you about the time that they sunk my ship, and I had to get over it." And he said, "If it wasn't for a destroyer running around there, we may not have got out of there." I says, "Well, really, Ray, you're just talking to him." But anyhow, these B-38s came out, and they would shoot down a jet plane, and then they'd come along about bridge level with us and wave their wings at us and stuff. And I thought, that's the most beautiful sight I've ever heard, seen. it gets to be a small world, really.
Yeah.
When it boils down to it. I didn't have a clue that we'd ever been in anywhere at the same time. But when he mentioned this ship being torpedoed and about the tugboat, they were in lifeboats trying to get over to another ship.
Yeah.
And watch this whole thing. They didn't lose any men on that ship.
Yeah, like you said, that's a small world. I mean, just to imagine that, you know, you're talking to the guy that you watched his ship sink as you were protecting him. Your ship was protecting
him. See, to keep good steering, we had to circle it rather rapid, because if you're kind of dead in the water, you can't do any steering.
Mm-hmm.
And so here we are just chasing around and around the ship, hoping to keep the Japanese off of it until the tug called it into the shore. It wasn't very far to shore. And lo and behold, I was talking to the guys in the plane. They said, "We got to go, guys. We're out of gas. We're too low."
Yeah.
I said, "Well, where's your relief?" "Well, we hope they're on their way." Well, they weren't on their relief quick enough. But they stayed this time. This bunch stayed until all the ships got ashore. But we had one of the tragedies of some of those landings there. You know, an LST, that's called something else. We would call them warm ship targets. But anyway, when they hit the beach, they open up these huge doors in front, and they can drive tanks and stuff out of there. Well, the Japanese got pretty smart on that. They would bomb or even crash their plane right into them. So we were the only ship in the area there that had a doctor. And we got some of those guys that were terribly burned on the ship. Most of them didn't even make it. And the price of war. I have no solution.
You know, there's never a solution to war. I mean, mankind is...
You know that the Marines in Iwo Jima lost 7,000 killed and taken. The reason they wanted that island so bad is the planes and fighters that couldn't make it quite back from Saipan to Guam would have a place to land.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't worth it. I agreed with Alan Hoppin because it helped a lot, but I didn't agree that, you know, we could, if they got a discipline, we had plenty of people to pick up the crew.
Mm-hmm.
And here they cost them. Of course, they didn't realize what the terrain, this volcanic ash, they had a terrible time climbing up the hill. Actually, the mayor of Billings, his name was Fox, he lost a leg there and he was in
there. Oh, really?
Bill Fox, that's quite a few years ago, he was mayor. I don't know if you remember, he was a school teacher in town.
Mm-hmm.
He was the principal of that Broadwater grade school for years, and he became mayor. And he bought a place up out of Sarkey, and still alive. I see him at ball games. But he learned to walk with that artificial leg pretty good.
Yeah, he learned to adapt. Yeah, Iwo Jima was something else. I couldn't imagine.
Actually, Okinawa was a blood thing. The thing that disturbed about the Japanese when we were doing the Saipan Tinian thing, they, as our troops pretty much backed them up into this elevated area, and there was cliffs just like our Tinian airport and stuff. Rather than being captured, those goofy people jumped off that cliff into the water, which is probably 500 or 600 feet, because they killed them by the thousands. And as we were patrolling that area out there, there's bodies in the water. Bodies everywhere. All they had to do was raise a white flag and the war would have been over. But they had this thing, they had to either win or die.
Yeah, the code of honor that they had.
And of course they're like the Germans in the history town, you read the German thing, any of Germany's troops that even talk like surrender, Hitler had them killed.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things showed a place where they, with some of those officers, they would tie piano wire around them and attach it to concrete walls and have it up high enough that just their toes touch the ground, the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And if they let down on the toes, they would cut their neck off and stuff. And right up to the very last, he was having people assassinated that knew the war was over and hoped that they would quit fighting. And, you know, when you got the fear of getting killed that way, you don't stay there and fight.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you might live through the fighting, but you're not gonna live through that type of thing.
But I've had several people ask me what had happened had we lost the war, knowing how the Japanese treated their people and how the Germans treated their people.
Mm-hmm.
They would probably reduce our population by 50% in the first year.
Treated their own people, the other people in the war, the Chinese, the Jews.
That brings into play to the Iraq thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think, sure, they got bad intelligence, but I think the possibility of freeing millions and millions of people from slavery is worth the task. And I think the military people understands that over there, and the only people that don't understand it here don't realize what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
This might even stop the war between the Jews and the Palestinians. And I think that has a bearing on what Bush is about. I don't know why you stand on that, but I'll just tell you how it's done. But that, I think that's behind the whole thing, even if they, of course, they make a big deal about not finding these weapons and stuff of mass destruction. They know they were there because they took inventory of it when they had the Desert Storm.
Yeah.
It was there.
Mm-hmm.
But where did it go? Where Syria and Iran are such radicals. They had months and months and months while the United Nations was trying to figure out what to do. They could have moved.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, we had aerial photos from the satellite showing convoys of trucks moving. That they're trying to get an uprising in Syria and Iran. I don't know if they'll ever get one or not. But those people have no use for human life. They don't mind killing tiny babies and kids. The Muslim thing is crazy.
Yeah. Like you said, it's just the same way that people were treated by Japan and China.
They'd work them till they couldn't stand up and then kill them. Jesse Miller was able to do it because he was a dedicated Christian, and I think he knew that there was a lot of people that was praying for him, and he knew that his faith would keep him going.
Mm-hmm.
And he wound up becoming a missionary. He started a overseas servicemen's center they would go in and rent a big old house, and they would have a place where military people could come and eat a dinner, and they could come and take a bath. He started those all over England and Japan and all over, even right as soon as the war was over. Of course, as soon as the war was over, it looked like we were going to be in war again with Russia.
Yeah.
And he finally died. Oh, I thought about that guy's name. I can't think of it. The one that he knew in the Philippine Death March. He finally died, and we get a letter from his wife every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
She's still living in Colorado, and they have a center down there for the people there in the air, what do they call it there, the National Guard
Air Force Academy.
They live right close to that air.
Mm-hmm. Down in Colorado Springs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they have kept in touch with a lot of these people over the years. And it was a real service to them. The USO tried to do, and they did a lot of good things, but they didn't even in the Pacific, you would hear about an entertaining group coming around, stuff that we never did see.
Yeah.
And this, actually, this MASH program, it's quite accurate with what was going on in mm-hmm. Korea.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably, I have an idea, the writers of those people probably were in Korea at one time or other. Now, I'm not familiar with their, how they operate their hospital and all this stuff, but I am familiar with how mutilated a body can mm-hmm. get and still survive.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing how much of a human body can go through and still pull through.
Well, look at this gal that they just pulled the plug on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we've heard the last of that. I really don't.
I don't think so either.
But she wasn't on life support system at all. She was just eating.
Mm-hmm.
And the irony of this thing, that's how they've been keeping the Pope alive.
Yeah.
With a feeding tube.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially lately.
And the way she would follow people with her eyes, and the way she could make some motion with her head and stuff like that. She was murdered, as far as I'm concerned. And I've lost faith in our judges quite a bit. Whether it'll ever get corrected, and you might have a completely different idea. If you do, I like you just as well without it. So, I mean, you know, I'm not trying to persuade you of one thing or another.
Well, George, let's just wrap up a few things here. Looks like we already covered Hollywood. Basically, what about the war made the biggest impact on you now that it's over, now that you've had time to reflect on it?
It's just history.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I was through paying for it until this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It had to be done. I think and for most cases we did an excellent job of doing it. Mistakes made, sure, lots mm-hmm. of them. Fortunately, the only thing that we sunk that was ours, we accidentally, at night you can fire what they call star shell. It lights up the air so you can see who you're fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And one of our star shells hits a PT boat.
Oh,
we picked the guys up and burned it. But as far as I know, that's the only friendly people that we hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thankful for that.
Yeah, exactly. You hope that you can get through without having too much friendly fire. Well, let's just end it with a question here. Would you do it again if the same situation arose after what you've been through? I mean, not necessarily at your age now, but would you do it again?
Oh, sure. No question.
Situation.
Yeah. I didn't want to go into the Korean thing, and I realized the value that Korean and a lot of people think that Korean and Vietnam were useless, but hey, it stopped the spread of communism and eventually stopped Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like that even though I was disappointed at the way they called me in, because there were a lot of other people that hadn't served that should have been serving, that wasn't serving for one reason or another. Mm-hmm. But no, I would do it again, sure.
Well, what's something that you kind of want to leave for future generations on this subject? I mean, just one final thought, just one final overview of, you know, the complete war and war in general. What's your final thought that you'd like to leave for future generations? Because future generations are going to be listening to this interview that we did today.
Well, basically, if the danger to our people is there, we must go and we must do.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what the cost, if you lose your freedom, it's worth fighting for. Our freedom is worth fighting for. Even at my age, if something came up that somebody was needed for something, I'd go without taking anything back.
And Will,